everything that we say from here on in is going to be gold.
Of course.
That is a large assumption, but okay. Yeah.
It's a large assignment. Let's get going. The Berenstain Bear Scouts actually do scream their heads off in this one.
That's true. It is delivering upon that promise in the title. You've got that going for you. But of course, that bar is so low that you barely have to raise your limb to get over it.
We also have what may be the best introductory chapter since The Haunting of Hill House. So...
I mean, I wrote down when I started going through that first page, it's like, wow, there is a lot of world building about how people get in and out of this town on roads. This better pay off. It paid off.
Yeah. I was thinking to myself as I read this, I was like, wow, never before have I ever wondered what happened if I left Bear Town the other way.
We don't talk about that. That's the bad side of town.
All we know is it's surrounded by marauders who just wear overalls.
Come to find out, there is an entire stretch of highway that no bear ever drives.
And that is bad city planning. Let's get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, I mean, you drive all you have a whole highway that nobody can drive on.
Yeah, and you later find out that people don't, what is it? People don't avoid it because it's such a bad road. It's such a bad road because people avoid it. Something like that. I'm like, I don't think that's how city planning works at all. I think eventually you just build a Five Guys and then people start driving in that direction.
Right. Yeah.
When was this book written?
This is 1998.
Okay. So that house is definitely supposed to be evocative of the Marston house from Salem's Lot. No?
I wrote down the same thing, Gene.
Well, right up to the kids going into it and like kind of fucking around and then getting scared by something and running away.
Yeah. Well, hang on to your horror references until we get into the meat of the episode.
Sorry. You didn't send me an outline.
I've still got to do the intro here, so are you ready?
I'm sure. Ready.
Here we go. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and it is the spookiest time of year. That's right, it's Saturday. The spookiest time. No, it's October. We're finally gearing up for Halloween. And because it is October, I have saved what may be the best Berenstain Bear Scouts book for last. That's right. The Berenstain Bear Scouts are coming to a close. But unlike the last couple of Berenstain Bear Scouts books I've covered, this one actually has the Berenstain Bear Scouts in it doing scouting. Unlike the last two books, which were literally just about civics.
I want to know exactly how this constitutes as scouting, because when you're told to stay someplace to legally own it, I'm not entirely sure that comes up in most scouting books. That's a slightly extracurricular activity.
If you can come up with a merit badge for it, by the definition of scouting in the Berenstain Bears books, it is legally scouting.
Also, scouting, you don't make your own merit badges. There's a lot of rules and then complete lack of rules when it comes to Bear Scouts.
Oh, yeah. Well, bear in mind that these are the only Bear Scouts in the entire city. So they're kind of flying by the seat of their pants here. They
so
never go
the
to meetings.
Only group without a rival in the entire. Because everyone else is in deep opposition to one other group in this town.
Oh, of course. Of course. And what book are we talking about this week? Why, we are discussing the Berenstain Bear Scouts Scream Their Heads Off, a title that promises a lot, from 1998. And who have I invited onto the show this week to discuss this horror-filled tome, this book so filled with ghosts, goblins, blood-curdling scares, and I'm just grasping at straws here because this book is a big fake. All the Berenstain Bears horror books end up being a big fake out. We should know it by now. But as we all know from mainstream horror, most horror movies just end up being a big fake out. So it is my honor to welcome to the show the hosts, both hosts of the Kill by Kill podcast, everyone's favorite horror-themed podcast, Gina Radcliffe and Patrick Hamilton. Hello, you two.
Hello.
Greetings and salutations, Bear Country.
the greatest duo I could have to discuss the scariest book you will read all Halloween. I hope I'm not overselling it.
No, I mean, this is the implications of this book are frightening.
I am more afraid of bear lawyers than I ever was before.
This book has it all. This book has an entire opening chapter devoted to the like folkloric history of an empty house. Mm-hmm. It has implied murder. Yes. It has an entire section of Bear Town that is unexplored by anyone except the town bullies. It really sets up a whole lot, and then the plot gets really weird and legal.
Oh, yeah. There is a lot of legalese happening here to the point in which people are explaining it halfway. You're kind of like, is that the point of this book? Is to, like, explain, contract law to people?
You may be surprised to hear this, but in the last book was entirely about, city planning. And the book before that was entirely about the ins and outs, the business ins and outs of running a legal casino in town. Oh, and how the members of the city brought down a legally operating business by employing the strong arm of the cops and forming a parent group that actually went in and busted the casino up with crowbars. So,
The next book is the Berenstain Bears Buy a Timeshare.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. The Berenstains were obsessed with explaining to kids how stuff kind of works.
I mean, someone has to. But it is, I mean, so much of this book goes into areas that it starts to overextend its hand in terms of explaining things, and it just leads to more questions that it is unconcerned with, and then goes out of its way to overexplain things that no 8 or 9 year old would ever be interested in.
That is the theme of the Berenstain Bear Scouts chapter books. You nailed it right on the head.
So, nailed it in one, baby.
Why don't you two help me out here by just sort of explaining the premise of the Berenstain Bear Scouts Scream Their Heads Off.
Gina, have you ever watched the pilot episode of Scooby-Doo?
Oh, of course.
Okay. It's the pilot episode of Scooby-Doo.
It's Scooby-Doo goes to the Marston house from Salem's Lot. Only there's no vampires. I feel like there should have been a bear vampire.
Yeah, at least one bear vampire floating outside of a window, lightly scratching at the window. I mean, if you're in for a penny, you're in for pounds.
Bear pajamas. It would have been, cute and incredibly creepy at the same time.
Yeah, one graveyard attendant who leers at young, supple young bears as they pass by and mutters to himself about the day he'll be able to rule their flesh to himself. And you're like, oh, Steve, this is weird.
This is all a Salem's Lot reference for listeners at home.
Yeah.
So tell us about this opening chapter, though, The House on the Hill, which does have an incredible illustration of The House on the Hill.
It does. It features some wonderful stuff, including a couple of trees that have faces on them. And apparently the attic is full of bats. And it starts with a lot of talk about ways in and out of this town. It's just, and you're like, that can't possibly come to fruition. But let me be the first to inform you, it does. And in the weirdest way possible.
Yeah, I'm looking at the illustrations. This house is breaking so many building codes.
Right. Why is it still standing?
You've got like a collapsed staircase with like a bunch of eyeballs staring off from underneath it.
And it's next to a graveyard, which is also referred to as haunted. But does that mean in this universe all graveyards are haunted, or this is just a particularly bad case?
I don't know. The only graveyard we've had any experience with in the book series so far has been the auto graveyard, which itself was haunted. So So maybe, yes, I would say all graveyards in Bear Country are purported to be haunted. Now, of course, the graveyard, the auto graveyard ended up being fake haunted.
Oh.
But then so does everything in Bear Country. I think it was being fake haunted. I think it was being fake haunted by the Bog Brothers.
Oh, how are these people still out?
There's honestly hundreds of them. There's so many Bog Brothers. We find out in one book that there's endless, like, there's so many cousins and brothers and half brothers and just one mother who like rules them all. They're basically the Beagle Boys. Like, cause there's like a mama Bog Brother and then the Bog Brothers. And I'm like, dude, if your name is Bog and you're forced to live in a bog,
yeah,
you have one path in life, and it is drug dealing. It's drug deal. That's it. It's drug deal.
Yes.
And fencing stolen items to a purportedly haunted house.
Yes. With the only place in town you could possibly do it. And of course, yet again, our entree into this place no one should go to is too tall. He always seems to be putting his snout somewhere where it does not belong. And yet he's never part of any of these adventures. He's just this person that wanders about and tells tale of the places he's been, and everyone goes, well, I don't know if I can believe him. And turns out, like, Too Tall is not wrong about this. He is not lying.
No.
Also, we find out that Too Tall did an Andy Warhol-esque painting of fruit.
Oh, yes, that's right.
By smashing fruit all over a canvas. I don't know. I like it. I like it. I think you throw some shellac on that. You just put that up in a museum of modern art. It'll do great.
I really did not see an open debate about what does or does not constitute art as part of this book, and yet it is here.
Yeah, there's a little bit of some bottom of the bong philosophizing in this with the, if you make a project out of, you know, popsicle sticks, can you build a giant popsicle stick out of 50,000 smaller popsicle sticks? And I'm like, can you?
Yeah, is that?
I guess you could, sure.
What gets me is they mentioned that Too Tall smashed a watermelon and a bunch of grapes and called it fruit salad, but he's clearly holding up a painting of that. Like, he made a painting of it.
Yeah.
And he's still got a D- on it. I'm like, Mr. Smock, come on.
I mean, you can't say that he wasn't, like, showing people his passions. Like,
right.
Busted fruit for Too Tall, like, that's pretty deep for him.
And so, there's two comedians who made a career around that, Gallagher and Gallagher 2.
Yeah, I feel like we're, you know, putting Too Tall in a very bad space where no matter how much he tries, he still won't progress in life because everyone's determined to believe that he's terrible. And he might be a terrible person, but he's actually fulfilled that assignment. And I would like to speak to the school board.
Okay, Mr. Tall.
Yeah. I see, 15 years later, this guy would have an urban exploration channel on YouTube and he would be doing just fine for himself.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've talked a lot more about Too Tall than I thought we were going to, considering he's only in the book for 3 pages. So how do the Cubs get involved in this purportedly haunted house?
Begrudgingly.
By a very eccentric old lady.
Yes. After they've apparently run out of merit badges that they want to participate in.
Yes.
They're
I love their merit badge ideas. Like, I'm just thinking, like, I just want to go in for, like, you know, speed typing or something like that. It's no, like, you know, making lanyards or anything like that. It's just the most specific stuff.
They mentioned the old saw basket weaving comes up. Mm-hmm. Like the go-to useless task that people always mention. I always have to come and point out once again that basket weaving is an incredibly difficult, incredibly important step in the development of like human development, like the ability to weave a basket. It was like the basis of like many a society, and I don't believe that we should be teaching our children to turn up their noses at basket weaving.
There's a subtle feeling in it when it's brought up that if one were to engage in basket weaving, that one might be considered outside of gender bounds. There's a weird vibe happening there, which is a little odd, but not uncommon for the time. That doesn't make it great.
Well, where does popsicle stick sculptures come into play?
No, popsicle sticks are the most manly arts.
Oh, I see.
And then banjo playing falls somewhere in the middle.
Okay, so they mentioned banjo playing, and then he's like, and then sister or someone says, "We don't want to. I can't imagine just sitting around strumming all day." And I'm like, "Well, that is your first problem. You should not be strumming your banjo. You should be learning a good picking technique, right. Bear Cubs."
Also, it's not just that they have to learn how to play the banjo. They apparently have to start a banjo band.
Yeah, right. Why does it have to go all the way to touring band?
Right. It does seem like a pretty big leap merit badge-wise. Like, I learned to start a fire with two sticks. I learned to ford a stream. And now I have to start a successful banjo band.
Like okay, this week we're gonna learn orienteering. Now yeah. You haven't you know how to do it, but you haven't earned your badge yet because now you have to lead a group of pilgrims across the United States. No, it's you don't have that sort of escalation. It's just you learn a skill, and once you demonstrate the skill, you get the badge.
Well, they do not have any skills they want to demonstrate. Fortunately, an old woman dies.
Thank God.
But like the way all great stories start, yeah.
Literally, the widow Bearkin, who no one's ever heard of.
That's tragic in and of itself.
She's mm-hmm. been run into occasionally in town, but that's about it.
Right. And they ask if she's related to the widow McGriz. And I'm like, all widows aren't related, kids. That's not how it works.
Well, what if they had a common husband? I mean, is bigamy a big thing in this town? I don't know every secret here.
Maybe generations ago.
I mean, I learned in this book that supposedly the Bear Scout headquarters is also supposed to be secret. You shouldn't have a place that, like, oh, don't tell anyone in town where these five miners are.
And also apparently an adult cannot get into.
Yeah. Right.
Which just seems like a horrifying accident waiting to happen.
I hope there's no open flames.
Yeah.
It's in an abandoned chicken coop. In the
abandoned
other...
by the chickens or abandoned by a chicken farmer?
Abandoned by the chickens, given to them by the chicken farmer, Farmer Ben. Oh. However, in the other Berenstain Bear Scout chapter books, there's slimmer versions of it's a completely different series. They live in a tree with an intelligent talking owl who is not present in these books. So it's fascinating to me how the Berenstain Bear Scouts in the Berenstain Bear Scout multiverse, the continuities diverge in many different ways, and this is the one with the abandoned chicken coop.
So that was one of my questions, because at one point they make a joke about how bats can't read because their eyesight isn't very good. And that's a good kid joke.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things where they're like, haha, animals reading. That's dumb. You're sentient bears.
Well, we're sentient primates. So in the chapter books, none of the other animals are intelligent.
Okay.
In fact, when they've adapted stories from the cartoons that involve, say, another talking animal, mm-hmm. they just write that animal as a completely normal animal. So, like, maybe it has a smile on its face. That's it. They're like, oh, the giant talking bass is just a bass now.
Mm, okay.
And the kids don't like him because he's friendly. They just like him because he's a big bass. Mm. So,
have it coming. I mean, just look at that.
Right. You go more than 100 pages, you got to write out the bass. That's fiction rule number one.
Sure.
So the widow Bearkin dies, and she leaves the scouts her house atop Spook Hill. Yes, the widow Bearkin was the owner of this dilapidated mansion.
And she did nothing with it.
What?
Why didn't she do anything with it?
She's old.
I was going to say, she's old.
Yeah.
Have to do it yourself. If you have a property that might be worth hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, you can hire somebody to do something about it. You're just like, when I kick it, I'm going to give it to the scouts.
She loves the scouts, though. They helped her cross the street once when she was very young.
The only act of kindness anybody ever did.
Yeah, I guess. Are you telling me that if I had stopped and said hi to the widow Bearkin once, I would have been left a house? That's
you
all it would have
been
taken?
Left half of the house, yes.
I've been avoiding her for years. She's
your
creepy.
Folly. Your folly.
Now, I don't know how much this house is actually going to be worth in reality. It's falling apart, and it is in a part of the town that no one ever visits. And from what I understand, one of the major things about real estate is location.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a place that's nearly inaccessible by car. So, and it's atop Spook Hill, which just seems like, and it's next to a graveyard, which seems like a major deterrent.
Oh, listen, people love graveyards. I mean, that's a real tourist attraction. So, I mean, that you've got that going for you. You just have to build something else there.
And or then atop the graveyard.
On right on top of you. You don't have to move the bodies. You can just move the headstones.
I was going to say, you'll be fine until your daughter is sucked into a closet one day.
Yeah. Right. And then
find what are the chances?
And the book ends with the old Widow Barrigan's house collapsing in on itself and disappearing in into a singularity.
Now that's a book.
Tale as old as time, man.
So as if it isn't bad enough that she's left them this large piece of property they somehow have to deal with, they also have to somehow... Okay, so explain to me why... Okay, it's not just you have to stay the night. It's you have to go to this house at midnight to claim it in order to prove there's no ghosts.
Yeah. You psychologically torment these children so they might have a chance of winning this old-ass house.
Yes.
And how common knowledge was it that it would be inherited by a group of scouts? Or is that just pure happenstance?
No, she wanted the scouts to inherit it.
Oh, no, I know that. But the eventual discoveries that people have been, you know, propagating this myth that it is full of ghosts to... Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. Ghosts. So people will stay away. And that allows the Bog Brothers to move all their illegal and fleeced goods through that hub. But... did they know about this legal deal? Is the lawyer in on it? Because he seems very in on it.
Oh, he totally, when he decides that the last one, he's not going to come into the house, and they make a big point of saying how he says his knee hurts, but nobody ever, he hadn't mentioned that before. And I'm like, oh, okay, he's going to scare them.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, he's just scared. He's a scaredy cat, doesn't want to come in the house. So he's going to let this, you know, middle-aged, older woman and four children go in his house by themselves at midnight.
And based on the movement of their flashlights, determine whether or not they have legally done what was required of them.
Right, because once they enter the house in a few chapters, things go from spooky to dangerous.
Yes.
Very quickly. But yeah, so they have to go to this... So. Legally, in order to claim the house, they have to, in order to disprove the claim that Spook Hill and structures thereon are haunted, and that you Bear Scouts are worthy of this gift, you must first prove that you have the gift of courage. You must take possession of the hill and the house thereon at 12 midnight at the time of the next new moon. It doesn't ever explain... What this has to do with her really liking Bear Scouts.
Like I said, it seems like she kind of wants to torment them a little bit.
Yes. I guess. Like, she's like, if I die alone, at least I know that I'll, like, just really scare a bunch of kids at some point. Like, that's all I can think of.
Why would this ever be someone's dying wish?
I have this house I've never lived in. I've let it fall apart. Also, there's bodies next to it. On my dying wish is that after I'm dead, a bunch of kids will go in there. That's it.
And they'll either determine that it's... But what if they... And my question is, in terms of their legal obligations, if they were to go in there and go, that place is full of ghosts and we have proof that there's life after death, are they then denied the house?
Right. Do they forfeit all rights to the house? That's what I'm wondering. If they fall through two floors and land in a sub-basement and die, do they forfeit the house?
And who do their parents sue in this case? Right.
The ghosts? The Bog Brothers?
Yeah, everyone seems totally cool with this.
Yeah, I was literally just going to say, everybody's parents are super chill about this.
To be fair, the Cubs aren't cool with it. They're like, no. We don't want the house. We don't want to go in the house. And it's Jane who's like, we could really use that cash.
I think the only adult who is kind of like against the idea is Grandpa. He's basically like, well, have fun. Hope you don't die.
Yeah. So we get some very, we get a lot of conversations about the house, about, you know, the legends behind the house. But we also get from Gramps this wonderful legend about Widow Bearkin herself, who may be younger than she looked. Because the rhyme goes, the Widow Bearkin drove through town in her old convertible with the top down. She drove up Spook Hill when the moon was bright and aged 30 years overnight.
I mean, I get it. You know, 2020, man.
In a way, we're all living on Spook Hill. And it's way after midnight. And we're deep in the sub-basement and the Bog Brothers are all around.
I mean, he introduces this like, well, you know that old rhyme, as right. everyone in town does, which casts back to something that Gina and I had to confront when we talked about the Nightmare on Elm Street series, mm-hmm. which is that this town has a rhyme scheme for a child murderer, and they all know it.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of cool with that.
Like, yeah, it's the moment in Nightmare on Elm Street when they're all, when the kids are, or the teens are like, you know that that rhyme we used to say? And I'm like, it never struck any of you that this was this weird creep. Like, no one else says this rhyme ever yeah. anywhere else. This isn't Little Bunny Foo Foo. It's not Cinderella dressed in yellow. It's yeah. a very regionally specific rhyme about a murderer.
It is, they treat it as if it's, you know, Jingle Bells Batman smells.
Yeah.
It's passed orally on from every child to another. But this one only exists within the bounds of this one town. And Grandpa's yeah. like, oh, you're going up to that old house? Let me tell you a story about a lady who aged 30 years in one night. Like, dude, eat your blueberries and just fart off.
Yeah, even Gran is like, stop, you're gonna scare the cops.
Why are you terrifying these children?
Like, they're now in this contract where they have to go to a haunted house at midnight. And you're like, well, let me see if I can make this a little bit more difficult for them. Oh, thanks, Grandpa.
I hope when they get there, do they each get a box with a gun in it?
This would be a lot better if there was a Vincent Price character.
Yeah, so obviously this book is pulling from several different, like, origins. And one of them is, I can't think of the name of this of the book, The House on Haunted Hill.
Yes.
The House on Haunted Hill?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so it's pulling from all these different horror, like, sources. These classic, you know, you got to stay in the spooky old house. But as you noted up top, it is very much, and you can smell it coming from a mile away, it's very much a Scooby-Doo plot.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think, however, it actually succeeds in a way that most Scooby-Doo plots don't. Because the characters in this book are at least marginally intelligent.
Are you telling me that Velma, you know, when she has her glasses on, is not an intelligent character?
Because I challenge you to watch every episode of Scooby-Doo and name one useful thing she ever does.
She finds clues, and she also puts those clues together to understand who is behind the plot.
Now, usually they just stumble onto things.
But that's how all cops work.
They're not cops!
If you don't stumble onto things, you're a psychic.
They're teen sleuths.
That's right. And they're sleuthing. They can't go to the DA and go, listen, we need a writ so we can get in this house and find out what the real deal is behind the old, you know, what is the 49er, whatever that ghost is called. Right. I can't remember what the
regardless, none of it's going to hold up in court. In fact, 9 times out of 10, it's people scaring other people away from their own property. Which isn't illegal.
That's very, very true.
So there's this weird, this whole convoluted thing where, like, the Cubs have to stay over at, like, Scout Leader Jane's. Like, they stay up and they go to sleep and they're woken up again when it's close to midnight. And as we all know from being kids, when you have to wake up in the middle of the night and go do something, that was, like, very disorienting and weird.
Yeah.
Like,
their bodies want to be asleep. Like,
yes.
It is the true blessing of being that young. It's like your body's like, I've had it. Time to shut down. Like, my kid slept through an earthquake 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Just, and the dog, both of them. The house rattled as if God came down with a fist, just shook it. And they just blissfully slept through it all. If I have to get him up for any particular reason once he's fallen asleep, it's like pushing a zombie.
See, and I can't sleep if the cat gets on the bed. I am awake.
Oh, yeah. Like,
I'm awake for 20 minutes.
That old cartoon stereotype, like somebody laying in bed and like their eyes just open up really wide, just like a crack, like a breaking glass sound. That's like me every night. Yeah. With the giant bloodshot eyes.
We have two cats that purr so loud, you can hear them across the room, and I can't sleep through that noise at all. It's like trying to sleep with a lawnmower under the bed. And let me just tell you, those cats are always happy to be there. So the cubs go to the house. And as you said, the lawyer's there, but he quickly bows out, refuses to go into the house on Spook Hill. So it's up to not Teacher Jane. She is also Teacher Jane, but she is in the role of Scout Leader Jane and the cubs, who, by the way, are brother, sister, Lizzie and Fred. Not that it matters, because in the Bear Scouts chapter books, for some reasons, the cubs hardly have any personality traits.
They're one mind given four bodies.
Except that strangely, like Lizzie can talk to animals. That's never explained. And only sometimes.
You only use that power when you need it. Like Aquaman doesn't like wander around, you know, on land and just like point at a goldfish and go, I know what you're saying, brother. Like he saves it for when he needs it.
But he should.
Oh, he should.
They cross flashlight beams. They say their Bear Scout chant, which is one for all and all for one, which they've stolen from another source. And by chapter 8, page 55, we have entered the house on Spook Hill.
Yes.
And here's where the horror really begins. And I do want to commend this book. We are barely more than halfway through it, and we are in the haunted house. Like, typically, and Haunted Hayride will be the example, you wait until, like, the very last chapter to finally get what the cover has told you you're going to get this whole time, and then there nothing happens. And so I am very proud of the Berenstains for getting us to the haunted house before chapter 15. And then that's when they see that Tootall, Scuzz, Smirk, and Vinny have signed their names. And so they actually did make it up to the house.
Now, Tootall, I get, because he's very tall.
Yes.
Scuzz, great gang name.
Mm-hmm.
Smirk, this is where, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Smirk, that's your defining trait, is you like smize, but not quite.
I feel like he should be just the Smirk. Like a Dick Tracy villain.
He can only smirk.
He like fell into some nuclear waste and his face froze like that.
Yeah. Or he just got, you know, he was in an accident. Like something happened. Like half of his face is paralyzed. He can't help it. He didn't choose this nickname. The kids just started calling him Smirk. Why do you think he's a bully?
I didn't choose smirking. Smirking chose me.
But then Vinny gets off light. Vinny's like, my name is Vincent. What do you want to call me? Like, I guess Vinny. What's great, though, is that Tootall isn't a nickname. Tootall is his given name.
Yeah.
His father is Tooton. His mother is Tutu. And his sister is Too Much. Like, so he didn't stand a chance.
No. Everyone is Too something in that family.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But he is also tall and probably taller than he needs to be. And
well, he's been held back a lot, too.
Yeah, true.
It's true. He's been held back a couple of years.
We all had that one kid in our class who had a full mustache by the time he graduated high school.
I had one of those, like, gross, this guy can't grow a mustaches.
Oh, yeah.
But we had a rule in our high school, which was no facial hair. So we all had to shave.
We had a rule in our high school, you have to smoke in the parking lot.
We had that one, too, but... as long as you were clean shaven, they let it go.
Yeah, sure. Listen, when it comes to gross habits that will definitely, you know, hold you back in life, facial hair is the one you need to watch out for.
Yes. We had a guy we weren't even allowed to have like long, like sideburns. And, this one guy got away with it though, by growing his hair really long and just keeping it in front of his sideburns, which I was like, I mean, I guess it's a workaround, but no one can see your cool sideburns now. He also always wore a pouch around his neck on a rope, and everyone would ask him what was in the pouch, and he would always go, drugs. And we'd laugh, And then we found out later it was drugs.
I mean, this...
For, you asked.
We need to abandon this book immediately and just start a podcast about this guy. Because
he was awesome.
I want to know everything about him. Like,
he was also
so much to unpack.
Incredibly tall.
Yeah.
Like, too tall. He was one of the incredibly tall kids in the school. So, yeah. I don't even remember his name.
I mean, this is, we live in the internet. The next time that we're on this podcast, I want to know what this guy's name is, what he's doing now.
We'll turn into a storytelling podcast where we just make up stories about this guy and his travels.
I have connections. I'll figure it out. We'll find this guy. I'll have him on as my next guest. He'd be like, weren't you that little guy who was always afraid of me? Like, yeah. He was creepy. He was in the Dungeons & Dragons. I know so much about this guy now that I think about it. He played Dungeons & Dragons a lot. He wore his wizard robes to school. He had drugs on him at all times.
Now, did he wear shoes or did he have bare feet so that he could always be in contact with the earth?
He wore shoes because there were rules. There were rules about shoes.
The drug pouch was okay, but don't show up barefoot.
I think the rule was no drugs in your locker. I think that's why he wore it in the pouch because there were frequent, like, they would periodically, like, do locker checks. So I think he realized it was safer to just keep his drugs on him. So,
and
yeah.
He was a part-time wizard, so.
And he was a part-time wizard. He was a regular too-tall bog brother. So the Cubs go into the house with Scout Leader Jane. They see a bunch of rats with glowing eyes, and they hear a voice crying, woo, woo. And Teacher Jane is like, I'm going to go check this out. And here's where everything starts falling apart for our haunted house.
Literally.
Yes. Because what ends up being the truth behind these ghastly rats and this spooky voice?
Oh, it's some sort of radio. That's what, like, is this radio tuned into the Who channel? Like, there does not appear to be like
noises.
A cassette tape attached to it or a CD. It is literally a radio with a speaker, a volume, and a radio dial and an antenna.
You're listening to WOOO, Spooky Radio. That's right. 24 hours of a guy saying woo like a ghost into the microphone. Stay tuned for more of the ghost noise after these messages.
I mean, can they play like a block of regular songs that involve people saying woo? Like Sympathy for the Devil and all?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, there also was a ghost upstairs, by the way. A giant fake ghost.
Yeah.
Which Teacher Jane hits, and it crumples to the floor. And for a second, I was like, oh, was that like a person in there?
I would have loved that. This needs more injury. People are immune to any sort of physical effects, with the exception of the lawyer and his bad knee.
And his maybe a bad knee. I was just thinking, one of my favorite parts of the movie Scream is the fact that when they hit the killer, the ghost face guy, he actually gets hurt. Like, he actually, like, takes a punch and then he goes down for a while. When I first saw Scream, I had never seen a slasher movie in which that actually happened. Where if you kicked the guy, he was like, ah, and then he, like, had to stop and, like, regroup. So kudos to Scream. Thank you, Scream, for decades of fun. I was going to say, they find this radio. It's playing woo noises. They've realized that they're being tricked. It's on a bed, and they're like, well, we don't have to, like, explore the house anymore. We've proven that there's no ghosts. And they're like, we told the lawyer Bruin, that we'd check out the basement. And here's where Sister gets all lawyerly herself with, she's like, that's... So Lawyer Bruin said he would take their word about the basement. And Sister says that's dishonest. In the Bear Scout Oath, it says a Bear Scout is as honest as the day is long. And then Fred gets all lawyerly and says, this is the middle of the night. So, you know, they only have to be honest as long as the day is long. Which draws me back to the Riverboat Casino book that I covered, where the scouts had to sabotage a legally operating business by saying that only scouts are required to be honest if they're not acting in the capacity of scouts when they do something illegal, it doesn't count. So these cubs are great. They're great at finding loopholes. But none of it matters because the floor collapses and they fall into the basement.
Wouldn't you know it?
And they're fine. They're fine. I mean, imagine, like, we're all of a certain age. Imagine falling through a floor and then falling through another floor.
I fell off the sidewalk last December with my hands in the pockets of my overcoat straight onto my face. And I was taken out for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I can't take a fall anymore, man.
No. I got up wrong the other day from a sitting position. I was just like, oh, well, that's the rest of my day. Like, I didn't even do anything. I just sat up. I was like, I was sitting, and then I turned to stand up, and I was just immediately like, I'm done. I'm not going to do anything for the rest of the day. I'm going to go take some pain medication and just sort of take it easy. So yeah, falling. So the Cubs are fine, but Scout Leader Jane?
Yeah, and it's not like they're just falling through one floor. They're on the second floor. And they fell all the way into the basement, which means they crashed through the first floor.
And then landed on presumably a cement floor.
Yeah.
I have a small flight of stairs in my apartment, and every time I step down, I'm like, is it going to be today? Is it today that I fall down these stairs?
All of our hips have a ticking clock on them.
Exactly.
Well, they land in the basement. And then the floor collapses again, which is kind of, if this was a movie or a TV show, it would be a pretty funny gag just to have this massive crash. They regroup and then they crash through again unexpectedly.
Well, into I think that's something like, that have like the money pit or something like that. He just kept falling through like floors of the house. I love that movie so much.
So, and what's really weird about this book is the capture of the villains in this book happens completely off stage.
Yeah. And we learned like that basically there has been a group that has been using this as a hub for stealing stuff off the back of trucks and putting them onto other trucks, including the Beartown Theatrical Society of Rubber Rats with Glow in the Dark Eyes, which is a very evocative title for a box.
It does say that completely, the entire thing on the side of one of the boxes.
Both boxes, there are two. Yes. One to the left, one to the right. Both, we have seen that the artist has written out the entire title.
So
Beartown Theatrical Supply, Giant Rubber Spider with Web.
Oh, okay, Theatrical Supply. I was going to say, do they have a Spirit Halloween store somewhere in the area?
That's what you should do with this mansion, is it should become the Spirit Halloween Supply Store, because it's not an ongoing business. Now, somehow the cops get involved in this, including the chief, who's very suspicious of everything, and then the secondary trooper comes in, and they're like, where did you come from? And I was halfway into thinking, oh, he's in on it. He's in on it with the lawyer, but no.
No. And I thought that too, just because I've never heard of Trooper Jones before.
No. Is there a particular reason why Chief Bruno has John Hoppers, but no one else does? Or is that just an affectation?
He's a simple country folk. Trying to dress that part.
That is weird. I wasn't sure if that was like supposed to be his pants or if he just had like a major badonk. Like, look at that. If it was just supposed to be like, if the Berenstains, if whoever did the illustrations for this one was like, I've just wanted to draw and show the kids just how thick Police Chief Bruno was ever since I got this job. So here we go. I'm doing it now.
Yeah.
I don't understand the perspective. How are the Cubs standing in that picture? Where do the other cops' legs go? Where's the floor? I don't understand. This thing, it's like they fell into the sub-basement and now they're in like non-Euclidean space.
No, they're in some sort of liminal space.
You fell through the basement floor, you ended up on the other side.
This whole picture sort of comes across like a Rob Layfield sort of thing where everyone's body parts are exaggerated and no one has completed feet.
And Bruno's just, you talk about his weird legs, but like also his like feet are drawn like tiny, like, yeah, they're like all, I do not understand.
He's skiing, like he's shushing.
You know what it looks like to me? It looks like this picture was originally drawn from like their waists up, the cop's waists up, and then they had to go back and quickly add something at the bottom when it didn't fill the page.
Or yeah, that's, like that's, they had more words, and like, we're only going to need like a half a page illustration. And they're like, whoa, we came in under. Can you make that a full page?
Yeah. Add some because legs.
The scouts look very unfinished in comparison to the cops.
Yes. See, this is detective work. We've stumbled on the clues.
Take that, Daphne.
So the cubs didn't get hurt. They were upset that they had to scream their heads off. There are bad guys in this, but we don't ever see them until the very end. We see a photo of them. But it was the Bog brothers, everyone. It was the Bog brothers who were doing all the bad stuff.
Yes.
The criminal slash jug band? Yes. Going by their pictures?
The Soggy Bottom Boys, you mean?
Yes.
So yeah, so
running
so
a distillery in the background.
How many criminal organizations are in this town?
Organizations?
Yeah, because the Bog brothers are obviously a crime family.
Yes.
So, and they have their paws and a lot of honey, if you know what I mean. And but they don't seem to be the only ones because they're hiring all these truckers to move all this stuff. So
the way I understand it is, the very organized criminals all live in Big Bear City, which is essentially their New York. It's this the large city that's about an hour away. I'm not making this up. So Big Bear City is like the major metropolitan area. And they do say, like, they have their crime in Bear Town, but it's nothing like Big Bear City. And so when Ralph Ripoff needs, like muscle to help him with his schemes, he gets his friends from Big Bear City. Now, underneath Bear Town is a warren of weasels who are also trying to take over Bear Town.
Sure,
and
as you do.
No one except Gramps and the Cubs and Big Paw believe they exist, but they have on numerous occasions actually attempted to murder the Berenstain Bears and the Cubs. Like, not like depose them, but like actually kill them. And it's always the Cubs who end up like thwarting their evil scheme. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into these books. So I would say three major crime syndicates like operating out of this small town.
Okay.
This somewhat pastoral Green Gables-y area.
There's a lot happening in this town that just feels sketchy to me. This is not where I would raise my Cubs.
The mayor is totally corrupt. He takes bribes under the table constantly.
That's what mayors do.
But every business in town is owned by the billionaire and his wife who live on the other side of town in their mansion. Like everyone's basically under the thumb of this one family who owns and controls everything. So yeah, Bear Town's really corrupt.
It's like a kleptocracy that's happening in this joint.
It's great.
There's only one town that is managed worse, and that's the town in the that puppy show, the Paw Patrol.
Paw Patrol.
Paw Patrol.
I was gonna say it sounds like Dairy, but with like less child murder.
Yeah, or you know, less
could be
less
known could be child murder. That's true.
Because it's nearly child murder at times.
I mean, that we know of. We're not privy to every child in this town. Just mainly these four.
Yeah, we're only getting the story from the perspective of these cubs. Who knows what's happening closer to that abandoned freeway that no one uses? So, how does this abandoned stretch of road come back into play?
This is the route that the three big trucks have been using as a centerpiece because no one uses it. They're allowed to, you know, come and go as they wish. And I don't know what they're stealing from, but they're definitely stealing from someplace, storing it at the big house, which they mock up as haunted to keep people away from it, and then take it away in other trucks.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the business model is on that.
Well, clearly the Bog brothers aren't getting any money out of it. Look at them.
No, look at them. Like, what is all this for? Like, what are you amassing all of this stolen goods and loot? How is it all going to legal expenses?
It's just bailing out various cousins.
I'm wondering if maybe they were hired a long time ago by the old widow. And she got old and senile and forgot she had this criminal enterprise running out of the basement of her house. And it just kept going. Like, it was just it, like, momentum just kept the box. Sure. Like, they didn't know what else to do, so they just kept amassing computers in the basement.
That's what you do. And that's all I know.
And if she hadn't left the house to the Cubs, it just would have kept going. It just would have kept going on until the house collapsed, and then that would be it. Just a pile of old computers and ghost sheets and dead Bog Brothers. And so they do get the house. They actually, they do end up getting the house, but they don't sell it for cash. Instead, they turn it into the Bear Country Community Center.
With what money? Like, where did they get that money from?
They, Squire Grizzly, the richest bear in Bear Country, funded the whole makeover. Doesn't say what happened to the cemetery. I do want to point that out.
So when they put that swimming pool in, just be on the lookout because...
Well, there is a picture of the house. I don't see any graves anymore.
Well, we don't
see
any gravestones.
There were clearly graves before.
Yeah,
clearly. Yeah, there were graves in the original picture. Well, maybe not. Behind the house. Yep, where the teeter-totters are. There were graves. And now there's a playground. So when the children start disappearing, we will know what the kickoff to that storyline was.
And I will be back for that story because that sounds fantastic.
So yeah, so and they earned their real estate merit badge, which is a thing, I guess.
A real estate merit badge.
That's a lesson that every child needs.
And then every Halloween, they turn it into a big haunted house that people come and visit, and it's fun. Everyone loves it. And the final page is a jack-o'-lantern saying, "Whoo at us!" And that's it. What we basically got is a story of a house that we thought was going to be a haunted house story. Instead, it ended up being the origin of a haunted house story.
Yes. The legend came true. And thank God all of those boxes of rats and spiders came in useful eventually.
Came in handy. Yeah. You always think that you're not going to be able to figure out what to do with all of your boxes of rats and spiders. And then fortune just falls into your lap, I guess.
Yeah. If you believe in the universe will believe in you.
That's the lesson we learned from this. Yes. So, Patrick and Gina, any final thoughts on the Berenstain Bear Scouts scream their heads off?
I can't imagine a child would find this particularly compelling reading. when you get into the constant explaining of legal terminology. Although
there is a lot of that.
Yeah, and I did actually get a chuckle out of the one line because I work for an attorney. That basically said that we had to put legalese because that's what people hire us to help them understand what it means. And I'm like, that tracks. That's actually pretty accurate.
To me, that was the wittiest part of the book was when they're like, oh, we write it like that, so people have to hire us to explain it to them. And I'm like, touche. On a scale of 0 to 10, where does this rank on the old horror meter? With zero being the pilot episode of Little House on the Prairie, and 10 being the weird mime episode of Little House on the Prairie.
I'm gonna say a 4 because I was actually mostly horrified at the idea of falling through two floors, and my broken body landing on the cement basement floor.
Yeah,
existential horror.
Yes.
Yeah, I think a 4 or 5 because I think really the idea of a radio station that just broadcasts the ghost going all the time. It sounds like it's just terrifying to me. So that's where it got me.
It does sound like a good idea for a radio station, though. Like, now I want someone to actually just do that. I want that to be like a thing some lonely artistic person creates. A regular too tall, maybe.
Now, here's the thing, though. It's just a person sitting in like a DJ booth, like, and they take shifts with other people just going, woo, woo. Or do they record themselves and just play like a constant loop of it?
Oh no, it's live.
I assume after. Yeah. It's live. There's no art in just playing someone right. else's woo.
That's the novelty of it. That's the, you don't know when you tune in, you may tune in at the time there's a, I don't know, a shift change, or he has to drink a glass of water or something. That's part of the joy of listening to WOOO.
Yeah,
it's the purest Halloween channel.
If you want to listen to, you know, canned woos, go to Big Bear City. That's where you're going to get that.
That's where they are. Criminally produced woos in their woo distillery.
It's all some sort of racket to gain airwaves so that they can deliver out the numbers to the various gambling addicts or something like that.
So this was maybe not the be-all, end-all horror novel, but it was the be-all, end-all Berenstain Bears Scouts book, because we are done with the Berenstain Bears Scouts chapter books. It's the end of an era. It ended in 1998, and there's more Berenstain Bears Scouts after this, but no more big Berenstain Bears Scouts chapter books. So I am so glad you guys were here to help see us out at the end of this, at the end of this period that I've been covering for so many years. But Patrick and Gina, if in case our listeners aren't sure what it is you two do, what is it you two do?
That is a very good question.
I don't know.
Yeah. Once upon a time, I asked Gina, would you watch all the Friday the 13th movies with me? And we'll talk about all the characters in it in the order in which they died. And for some reason, she said yes. And 4 years later, we're kind of doing the same thing. We watch horror movies. We talk about the characters in them, which is what people don't really talk about. They talk about deaths or how spooky or scary something is or special effects. And we just get it down to, why does this person have something like that in their bedroom? So if you like that in a horror movie, come see us at Kill by Kill, because we're full of it.
If you love pedantry.
Yeah.
And nitpicking in a humorous way. We're not like ragey about it. Listen to Kill by Kill. Occasionally we get ragey about it.
That's a Jason X alone problem.
Yes.
And Dream Child, but we restrained ourselves to how long we dipped into Dream Child.
And occasionally you'll have me on.
Yes, we love to have you on. I believe the last time we had you on, we talked about the Nightmare on Elm Street remake.
Regrettably.
Oh, boy.
Which is a terrible motion picture.
Oh, boy. Almost but every if level. You say that online, oh, boy, will people come to its defense.
I don't get it, and none of them can prove it beyond the fact of, like, well, it's not bad. I'm like, oh, what are we defining? Like, you need to see more movies. That is bad in almost every single way. It is, and I don't mean this as, like, in comparison to the other Nightmare on Elm Street movies. It is just a poorly constructed, acted, and accomplished motion picture.
You can get more material like this if you listen to Kill by Kill. See, if you enjoyed the last 2 minutes of our conversation, it's just that, but just like concentrated and for minutes on end. So I love it. I think it's great. What are you guys doing? What are you guys covering next?
For October, we are doing at the beginning of the month, Fade to Black from 1980. Mm. Which hasn't been seen very much because of rights issues, but now is on Shudder, and it's going to have a Blu-ray coming out here towards the end of the year. And ooh. Then in the second half of the month, we're going to be breaking down Scream, 1996. Ooh. Wes Craven classic filled with some of the best and worst characters ever put in a horror movie.
Well, I can't wait to hear it. I hope everyone tunes in. If you're looking for me, you can find me at BerensteinBearcast.org. Oh, not ORG. Is it Berenstain Bear? I changed my website. Hold on. It's BerensteinBearcast. Yes, ORG. I'm so embarrassed. I can never.
Well,
I had
you
the
know.
Same web. I had the same website for 5 years, and then I changed it from a different one. So it's BerensteinBearcast.org. You can find me on Twitter at BStainBearcast. You can write to me at BerensteinBearcast@gmail.com, or find me on Patreon at patreon.com/DeepInBearCountry. You'll get some sort of bonus if you sign up. You get some sort of bonus episode every week or so. And otherwise, Gina, Patrick, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. This was delightful.
Yes, yes, it's a wonderful time. Yes,
we so rarely get invited to be on shows together.
Yeah, we're usually separated because they can't handle the heat.
Exactly. Too much.
It's overwhelming. Too much. And for everyone else, I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.